Thank you, Tina and Chris. That was lovely. Thanks so much. And Joan, your beautiful prayer, and Hugh, that amazing reading. Thank you. Appreciate it. And Lonnie, thank you for your welcome. Okay, I think I got everybody, so I can talk. I'm procrastinating, okay? I'm just procrastinating. Okay, so the talk today is called A Pause for Liberation. That's pause, P-A-U-S-E, not pause as an animal pause. And one of the reasons I'm speaking about it is that liberation is a huge part of our teaching, the science of mind teaching. You know, Ernest Holmes talks about that, how it's every person's birthright to be free, and that there's a yearning in each of us to be free. And that's one of the most important things about incarnating as a human, is that we get to meet the resistance yet fulfill the desire to become free. So freedom is immensely important to us. Liberation is important to us. So take a moment and think, you know, if I take a pause right now and think about what liberation would look like for me, what would that be? What would that look like? What would change? And then see if you can expand that vision a little bit to see if you can imagine liberation for all beings everywhere. And what would that look like? And how would I need to be? And what would change? I am willing to bet that every single one of us, including me, had a dream of liberation that was perhaps smaller than it needed to be. The other day, I had the honor of reading a speech by our friend Nipun Mehta, who received an award in Japan, the Goi Peace Foundation, I believe it's called. I'm probably messing up that name, but it's the people who plant the peace poles, and they've been around since the end of World War II. And he received an award from them, Service Space, his global service organization, or our global service organization, received the award as well. And he, in his acceptance speech, he said something that I thought was so beautiful. He said that we are handcuffing our brilliance. We are locking up our brilliance. Some of us may have locked up our brilliance and seemingly thrown away the key, but we have the key. We have the key. He also suggested that we have this whole ocean of infinity in front of us, and we are trying to put the ocean into a tiny bucket. This ocean of infinite possibilities in a tiny bucket. That reminded me of the story that I often tell about St. Augustine, where he was walking around doing his saint things, you know, and he, I don't know if he was a saint yet, but he happened upon this little boy who was holding a cup of the ocean in his hands. And St. Augustine said to the little boy, "What are you doing?" And the boy said, "I'm studying the ocean." And then an angel popped into the scene, and she said, "St. Augustine, that little boy is you. You're trying to hold the infinite in the cup of your hands. In order to understand the infinite, you must throw yourself into the infinite without caution. Just jump into the infinite and allow it to carry you, and that's how you'll know the infinite." So I'm encouraging all of us, instead of ignoring the infinite, instead of ignoring the possibilities of liberation, instead of ignoring the vastness that is available for us, that today we make the pledge, the commitment to ignite the infinite in our lives, to ignite liberation in our lives, to ignite perfect freedom in our lives. And we do that mindfully, kindfully, and I have a single word that will help us do that. But I'm not going to tell you yet. First, a dog story. So I've been here preaching in this pulpit for about 17 years. It'll be 17 years in March, which is shocking to me that I never wanted to be a minister, and here I am 17 years later, loving it, loving all of you, loving what I get to do every week, every day. And, you know, they say in ministerial school that when the congregation can speak the vision back to you, then you know you've accomplished something. Well, I do get a lot of that. I get a lot of people talking with me about kindness, about compassion, about being a center of love, living like the truth is true, all of those things that we talk about here. But the thing that I think I hear the most is a dog command. A sermon that I did where I told a story about my dog, Bartok, who sometimes when he picks up things on the hiking trail, I have to say to him, "Drop it, drop it, drop it." Uh-oh, drop it. And a lot of people repeated that to me because I made it as a metaphor for when you have a thought that keeps recurring, a thought of limitation that you can just say to yourself, drop it, drop it, drop it. Now, Bartok is still picking up things on the hiking trail. I'm still having to say, drop it. The other day, he walked for a good 4.5 miles carrying the leg of a cow. That was impressive. And I had to take it away from him at the end of the hike because that was not going in my car, just so you know. And I suspect that several of us are still saying to each other, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, drop it, or saying it to ourselves when we have a story that we're telling over and over again that does the opposite of liberate us, but that binds us into the past and into who we don't want to be. But that brings me to this other word, the word that I think is liberating, or one word of many that is liberating. Another animal story, another animal tale. If you live in Ventura County, perhaps even in LA, you might have noticed that it rained a tad last week. And in my house, when it rains, we have an outdoor aviary that's covered with plastic for the winter, and our rabbit and our guinea pig live out there. But when it rains, we feel sorry for them because the ground gets wet, so we have to bring the bunny and the guinea pig inside. And if you've ever gotten a load of my rabbit, you'll know that that's a big, I don't use the word load lightly, let's put it that way. She is huge. Her name is Hip Hop, but I've started calling her Hip Hoppotamus because she's huge. And they come inside and they live on the floor. They live in a pen in our living room because every well-appointed living room has a lot of hay and rabbit poo in it, of course. You know, we're very elegant here. We're from New York. We're very sophisticated, you know. And, but every day when I go to clean out the pen and get the animals squared away, I get the rabbit out into the yard where she likes to hop around when it's dry, and I get the guinea pig in a safe place, and I have to open up the gates to the pen, and the dogs like to go in there to eat various forms of debris, food and other debris that they enjoy eating. And so I'm opening up the pen, trying to get the guinea pig squared away so he doesn't get trampled, and I say, wait, 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 uh-oh, wait, wait, wait. And the word of liberation is wait. It invites mindfulness. Take a pause, wait. Before you're about to speak, before you're about to think something, before you're about to type something on social media, and wait. Wait stands for, why am I talking? And in the case of social media, why am I typing? There you go. Perfect. Perfect. You all are getting it, right? So why am I talking? I'll just stick with talking for now because I don't type a lot on social media. I just put up jokes and churchy things. Why am I talking? Well, on a good day, I'm expressing my authentic soul. I'm talking about the glory of God and what a joyful project it is to be involved in existence and to see the world through the eyes of love. That's on a good day. And on other days, I'm talking, and by I mean we. I'm not sure if you can relate to this, but I'm often talking to try and prove something to someone. I'm often talking to try and hide something from someone. I'm often talking to cover up something that I don't want to say. I'm often talking to cover up my shame or embarrassment. I am often talking to try and get somebody to change, to think more like I do. I heard that. So many reasons to talk, and so many reasons that bind us. If we are really living in unconditional reality in the world of Rumi's field, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, where everything is unconditional, where there is unconditional love that is not dependent on conditions, where there is unconditional joy that doesn't care what you think, it just, the joy can abound whether or not you think like I do, then we don't have to engage in those activities, in that talking, in that way of speaking that is trying to change others or trying to change ourselves in an aggressive manner or trying to prove something or trying to act like a victim or trying to manipulate in one way or another. You know, I was reminded of a book that we used to teach here in the church years and years ago, probably 10 or 15 years ago, and it was called Real Love by Greg Bayer. And he categorized the reasons that we talk or the reasons that we say anything into two types of behaviors that keep us from real love. And the two type of behaviors are getting behaviors and protecting behaviors. Getting behaviors are things like attacking, lying, clinging, acting like a victim. And the protecting behaviors are the same thing, except running away versus clinging. And it's amazing how often we fall into the trap of doing those things, but that doesn't bring us to real love. That brings us to propping up the sense of separation and the false self and the feeling that this person is against us when really they're not. They're there for us. They're there for our becoming. They're there for our enlightenment. You know, so it's my suggestion for myself and for all of us is to just practice that idea of wait. Why am I talking? And before we speak to somebody, particularly if it's getting heated, particularly if we're tempted to try and change that person, particularly if we're trying to suppress something in ourselves that needs to be expressed, why am I talking? And then look at the real reason without shame, without blame, without regret, and then see if another choice might be more conducive to giving us the freedom that we all long for. And freedom is one thing. Freedom is one thing. Freedom is great. But again, at the beginning of this service, I talked about handcuffing our brilliance and trying to put the ocean into a tiny bucket. What if not only are we trying to avoid being bound, but if our words could liberate ourselves and all beings everywhere? What if we could speak, as Emma Curtis Hopkins say, the words that make the world glad and sane again? What if that could be us? What if that could be you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and me, and all of us, speaking the words that make the world glad and sane again? As always, I turn back to the story that I tell so much. I apologize for telling it so much, or maybe I shouldn't apologize for telling it so much because it's such a good story and it has had such an impact on me. But it's the story about Arun Dada, who was, he wandered around India with Gandhi's spiritual successor, and he was incredible holy man. He came here to the church and he spoke, and we had a translator, and even though nobody could understand the actual words he was saying, the whole place was just lit up by his presence. And there's a story about him where he lived next door to this man that was difficult and used a lot of foul language and yelled and dumped his stuff all over Arun Dada's front yard. And when it came time to, he had a confrontation with him, and the guy came over to his house, the neighbor that was difficult, came over to his house, and he yelled at him, and he slapped him, and he broke Arun Dada's glasses. You know, that to me is like such a bully thing, you know, and I don't know if you guys were like this, but when I was in elementary school, that's what the bullies would always say to the kids. They'd be like, I'm going to break your glasses. And it just touches me so much that somebody could do that to somebody else. But Arun Dada said, you know what, I need a new prescription anyway, I'm going to go get some new ones. And and then they kept their distance for a while, but that was not enough for Arun Dada. He listened to his neighbor, he listened to the curses, he listened to what was going on over on the other side of the fence. And one day he heard him signing off from a phone call, and instead of saying goodbye, he said, Jai Shri Krishna. Jai Shri Krishna, which is like, hail, beloved Krishna. Hail, beloved love. Krishna is a symbol of love. And when the man walked by him the next day, he said, you know what? I heard you say Jai Shri Krishna to your friend on the phone. What if every time you and I passed each other in the street or saw each other, we said Jai Shri Krishna to each other? He waited. He meditated. He waited for the right moment. He asked, why am I talking? And he found the words that made the relationship glad and sane again. Because every time these two men crossed each other's paths, they would say that word, one to the other, Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Shri Krishna, which is similar to saying, I celebrate the love that is within you. And lo and behold, they ultimately became caring about each other. It changed everything, the words that made the world glad and sane again. There's another story about another monk. This is a Zen story. And there was this monk, we'll call it the proud monk and the humble monk. And the humble monk was somebody that spoke from the heart. And he didn't quote scriptures, or at least he didn't quote them accurately, and he probably told a lot of dog stories and whatnot. And I'm like cringing here thinking of me. Okay, so he just spoke from the heart. The proud monk was very intellectual, not that there's anything wrong with that, but he was able to quote passages of spiritual texts and be just so bold in his presentation and lofty and somewhat superior to the lesser educated people that listened to him. Well, lo and behold, the people listening over here to the proud monk started going over here to the humble monk. And the proud monk became angry. And he said, I'm going to go confront that humble monk and I'm going to tell him who's boss. And so he came over there to the humble monk and he talked to the humble monk. He was standing on the street and the humble monk was looking out a window. And he said to the humble monk, you can't boss me around, I'm the boss. And the humble monk said, oh, I understand. Well, why don't you come in here for a minute so I can really connect with you. So the proud monk came inside, stood by the humble monk, and the humble monk said, you know what, maybe stand to my right side because my right ear is a little, I can hear a little better out of my right ear. And then he walked over there, the proud monk walked over to the right side, and then the humble monk said, you know what, the right side isn't working for me. The light is better over here, so come over here. So the proud monk walked over here. And the proud monk realized that the humble monk had been telling him what to do. And he started going off on that, but the humble monk said, oh, no, I just know at your heart you're such a good-natured person and you would want to do what's best for everybody. That's a beautiful example of wait until the moment is right and ask, why am I talking? Am I talking to put this person down? Am I talking to make this person wronger than they even think they are? Or am I talking to lift this person up into the possibilities that they can be? Why am I talking? Right now, I can't remember why I'm talking because I don't know what I'm supposed to say next. So let me just mosey over here and see what I had a plan to say. Oh, yeah, how could I forget this part? The good news is, okay, this why am I talking business is not easy. It's not for sissies. It's not for wimps, okay? If you are a sissy or a wimp, you might as well just go watch an episode of, I don't know, Breaking Bad or something. I love that show. But anyway, watch something. Just go watch television because this is a practice that has the possibility to change the world and it's huge and it's big. It has the possibility to affect huge changes. But the thing is that it happens in the minutiae of our lives. But the good news about that is that we have so many opportunities to practice. So many opportunities to practice. Every single day, if I could remember to say, why am I talking? Sometimes the news will be good. Sometimes the news will be that, yes, I am showing up to make the world glad and sane again. And other times the news would be, oh, wow, you're talking because you're trying to prove that you're smarter than this person, or you're trying to prove that you're right and they're wrong, or you're trying to change this person, right? In the minutiae of life, this happened to me the other day. I had a little issue with this part of my car. It was the clicker, you know, the keyless lock thing, and said the battery was running low. And I looked at that thing, and I'm like, how do you open that thing? Does anybody know how to open that thing? Jennifer does. Okay, she's an engineer. What the heck? Yeah. So it just was a puzzle to me. Right, Tina? You're with me? We're talking the same language. Yeah, it was a puzzle to me. And I didn't want to drive all the way over to where Toyota is in Oxnard because, you know, I didn't want to go over there. I didn't want to book a flight to Oxnard, you know, and have to get over there, pack a suitcase, blah, blah, blah. And so I decided to go around the corner to Santa Paula, who has been, they've been very kind to me because they worked in my car in the past and they work on my husband's car. And so I called them first and I tried to explain the problem. And the man on the other side of the phone, I got bounced back between service and parts several times, so I was a little cranky. But the man on the other end of the phone started mansplaining to me. Mansplaining. And then I heard him roll his eyes. And And I have to say that that was karma, because I've been known to be a big eye roller. I got in trouble for it when I first moved here, and I went to a psychic who, you know, was trying to help me get the church in a form that I could work with, and she said, "You have to stop rolling your eyes at the congregation." And I said, "Oh, I do not roll my eyes." And I have recently been accused of minister-splaining, which is a thing, along with monk-splaining. And I have a friend who's a horse trainer, and I told her the other day, she's a trainer-splainer. So there. But anyway, it was karma. We couldn't figure it out on the phone, so I went in there with my little device and I handed it to him. But before I got in there, I practiced wait. I said, okay, how are you going to show up in that place? Are you going to show up as impatient as you are in this moment? Are you going to show up after having experienced the heinous crime of mansplaining and eye-rolling and take it personally? Or are you going to show up and make the world glad and sane again? And I chose the latter, and I was so happy to go in there and talk to these people in the parts counter who don't get a lot of contact these days and just show them my problem, and they fixed it right away, and I was just so impressed because they did something that I don't know how to do, and at the end of it, I just said to them, you know what, you guys, you made my day. You have no idea how important this is to me because I have to go places. My dogs need to go places, and having the ability to open my car, and the car won't even start if the key's not in there, so just thank you. Thank you so much. How much do I owe you? And the guy said, nothing. So I think that was a demonstration. That was a demonstration of the power of making the world glad and sane again, of waiting, of not jumping into our knee-jerk verbal reaction that often involves getting and protecting. Getting and protecting. Protecting the most fragile part of ourselves, which we might as well just let go. Protecting, getting the protecting that, and getting a stronger fortress for the most fragile part of ourselves, which we might as well just let go. Vulnerability is the key to happiness. Moving past that. And becoming that person that shines their light on the world and in so doing encourages others to do the same. Because I know we've all had that experience. Someone has been kind to you, someone has been kind to me, someone has been exceptionally kind to me, and then the next person I speak to, I'm exceptionally kind to because that person has put me in such a good mood. That interaction has put me in such a good mood. I feel that I should, rather than have this talk be replete with dog and rabbit stories, among other things. Maybe I'll be a little bit more like the proud monk for just a moment and give you some scriptural references, which I undoubtedly will misquote, but I have some scripture police that will come and tell me if I do. I'm already telling you I'm going to paraphrase, okay? What this story reminds me of is one of the Jesus stories about where he says that we cannot put new wine in old wineskins. And what that means to me metaphysically is that there is new wine coming into being. There is new wine as we're moving into the age of Aquarius, out of the Piscean age into the age of Aquarius, where we are lifted up into greater possibilities for all beings everywhere and for our earth and for our universe. And if we have old wineskins, if we put that new consciousness, that new wine into our old habits of being, into our old wineskins, then the old wineskins will burst and the wine will rush out. But if we can create new wineskins, not through will, but through willingness, and be that place where we can hold that beauty, hold that power, hold that love, and use it in a constructive way, in a way that lifts everybody up, not only ourselves, but everybody, that lifts up all beings, then that is part of the transformation of the world. So that's my Jesus part, and now I'm going to read you a little Ernest Holmes part, too. Ernest Holmes said, what did he say, little stinker? Okay, where is it? Okay. Oh, I just called Ernest Holmes a little stinker, didn't I? I say that with affection. Ernest Holmes said, "Find me one person who can get his own littleness out of the way, who can, W-A-I-T, and that person shall reveal to me the immeasurable magnitude of the universe in which I live." Is that not beautiful? Find me one person. That person could be us. It could be you. It could be anybody. It could be somebody that you observe. It could be somebody that inspires you. It could be somebody that disinspires you, that you get to rise above and be that one person. Find me one person who can get his own littleness out of the way, and he shall reveal to me the immeasurable magnitude of the universe in which I live. Is that not thrilling or what? The immeasurable magnitude, the immeasurable grace, the immeasurable love, compassion, joy, all of the qualities that we seek, all of the freedom that we seek, that person, that one tiny interaction has the capacity to reveal that to you. And then this idea of wait, actually, W-A-I-T, is from an article by Charles Eisenstein that I forgot to mention when I spoke about it initially. But Charles Eisenstein is this wonderful writer, and he wrote that we wait, we ask, why am I talking, to invoke a sense of reverence for the other. And in so waiting, we interpret each other's words generously. We give the other the benefit of the doubt. In so waiting, we let go of being right and seeming smart. In waiting, we learn to value each person's unique window on the world. We learn to be willing to see each other fully, shadow and gold. And we learn to be willing to be seen truly ourselves. And so that's it, you guys. That's it. We have the capacity right here, because all of us struggle. All of us have interactions that we sometimes that struggle with. We have interactions where sometimes we are feeling attacked. We have interactions where we are sometimes feeling like the attacker. We are constantly trying to change people. And this is not to tell us how bad we are. This is to tell us how much potential we have to make a positive, impactful, immense change in the world that will bless all beings everywhere. So I hope that you're with me in taking that wine and pouring it into the new skins that we cultivate together here in the spiritual center. I hope that you are with me in revealing the immeasurable magnitude of the grace in the universe. And I hope that you are with me in treating every conversation like it's a church, like it's a sanctuary, like it's a temple, because it is. It is reverent, it is pure, it is holy, it is a container for grace. Let's do that right now, and let us pray.